Hey, listen, if you haven't signed up for Mind Pump's 30 days of coaching for free yet, you might be crazy.
I can't believe it.
You might be crazy.
I
Something
can't
might
believe
be wrong
it.
With you. It's absolutely for free. All you got to do is go to mindpumpmedia.com. You register, and every day you get an email. And in this email, there are links to shows, links to videos. There's a topic that we cover.
Studies.
Yeah, so day one may be protein. We're going to cover protein on that day. And we have episodes that link directly to when we talked about protein, so you can learn more in depth. You know, day two may be, you know, wellness, meditation. It may be carbohydrates. It may be supplements. It may be, you know, resistance training. We cover 30 different topics, basically, for 30 days.
But we organize it all specifically there, so it's easy to navigate through.
It is, and it's a great thing to share.
Yep.
If you have family or friends that you want to get into fitness and they don't know much and they need more
don't
information.
Don't know where to start.
Don't know where to start. I mean, it's absolutely for free. We've already had thousands of people sign up for it. People love it. I do it. Go for it. It's at mindpumpmedia.com. It's the 30 days of coaching.
We got 14 reviews, 4 shirts going out. We got Tuna Cat 215.
That's Adam's
Falk
favorite.
Tuna Cat.
Steinmetz, My JCCDS, and Arnie Grape. All of you are winners. Send your name, the one I just read, to iTunes at mindpumpmedia.com. Your shirt size, your shipping address, we'll get that right out to you.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
Did I tell you guys what I did yesterday, last night?
What?
No.
I went to the movies.
Oh, you did not go see
it. We
what
did,
I think.
Dude.
You saw fucking 50 Shades.
Me and Jessica went to go watch 50 Shades Darker, I think it is.
Is that what?
Can I?
Yeah, give us the synopsis, please.
Worst movie ever. Just shit.
Really?
Shit.
Because you saw the first one and
it
we
was
talked
shit.
About this.
It was shit. Because I'm thinking that this is what I'm thinking. Like, we're going to go to the movie. We're going to get horny. We're going to go home. It's going to get weird. But
if you had your fifi right there.
Yeah, no. So, but the movie is so bad. It's so horribly done. And the main character guy, he's actually a psycho. Like in real life, if a guy acted like that, you'd be like, get the fuck away
now,
from
you,
him.
Now, you saw the first one, right?
Huh.
The first one wasn't even as bad, and the first one was bad.
But does it, is it like a...
Well, it was really tame.
Is it literally a part two, or is it like a different story,
so
different
how,
people?
This is how bad it is. We left the theater 40 minutes in.
Oh, wow.
We left and got our money
back. I
can
count on one hand how many times I've done that. It has to be a pretty bad
that
movie.
That has to be the second time.
The Hills Have Eyes. That movie was fucking terrible.
You walked out on that
God,
one?
God, that was
Well,
bad.
That's because that was scary.
Sleepless in Seattle. I walked
no,
out on
like,
that one.
There was mutants like fucking raping people. I was like, what the hell is going on? Get me out of here.
No, yeah. this wasn't bad in that way. It was just terribly done. It was a horrible movie.
Hmm. I heard that going into it. It was really so shit.
It was so shit.
We hung out. What you and I hung out on what Saturday? It was
Friday.
Saturday.
It was Saturday.
Saturday we hung out, and you know, you guys. I told Katrina, I was like, yeah, ask them if they want to go see Logan. Sal was like, oh, we want to go see fucking 50 Shades. I'm like, come on, really? So we didn't go to the movies because you guys wanted to go see that.
He was too psychotic in this movie.
Well, like he's super controlling. Like in the beginning, like some artist did a bunch of portraits of her. So this picture. Of her in this gallery, and she goes in there and she's like, oh my god, like shocked, like, oh, you put my pictures up or whatever. And then he's like, so one person just bought all the pictures of you. And of course, who do you think it is? It's the fucking main dude, right? And then so she sees him and she's like, did you buy all the pictures? He's like, and this is his answer, yeah, because I don't like other men gawking at you. Like, get the fuck out of here. Like, if a guy said that, if it,
yeah,
you know what I mean,
cool,
a girl would be like, you're
creep.
A fucking creep.
Yeah.
You could have said something better, like, I think you're so beautiful. I want to, no, I don't want other men looking at you. And that theme continues in the movie.
With you.
Then he finds out where she works and he buys the company she works for so that she works for him. Like, it's just a weird psycho.
Well, now you
psycho.
Say now you say that, you're but don't slave. You feel like maybe the person who wrote this probably depicted the character more closely to what they really would have been like versus how you would have done it? Since you probably wouldn't have been that type of a creepy guy, wouldn't think like that. Someone who's a creep probably does think weird like that.
I think the person who wrote it, this is what I think. I think what they're trying to do is depict this dominant, submissive kind of relationship and put it out into like, this is how, you know, he dominates her in the real world too. And people who are really in that world say it's the worst depiction of how that world really works.
Yeah.
They say it doesn't represent
well. You know what's
the reality?
I mentioned this before, but the Secretary. I think it's an older movie with.
Oh yeah, good movie.
Now that's supposed
Jake
to be hot.
Gyllenhaal or his sister. What's her name?
That's not the Secretary. You're getting something else confused. Is that what it's called?
No, it's what is Secretary. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Oh, there's another one.
It's probably something else you're thinking of.
Yeah. I'm thinking something else.
It is that sort of relationship where like one is like submissive, and but it's very playful. It's not like this weird psychotic fucking, you know, slave.
I just didn't feel it. It felt bad. Like watching it, just like, this guy's a fucking creep. He doesn't act very well. The movie's made poorly. The poor girl, I don't know. I just didn't. We walked out 40 minutes, dude. Oh. I haven't done that in forever.
Did it like ruin sex for the night too, or is that?
No, actually. Oh. We don't need
it
to.
Just shows you what a twisted fuck he is, right? It's like, it was a terrible movie, but man, the sex was great afterwards.
Yeah. Oh god.
I'm not gonna go into Anyway. Hey,
We don't need to go into
Eldoa was interesting.
Yeah, tell us about that.
So check this out.
I didn't come because I want to cough all over everybody.
You know, we talk a lot about tension and connectivity and how important it is. And we talk about the joints and mobility in the joints and the muscles. But rarely, if ever, do we ever think about the fascia. And, you know, I thought about that. I thought, God, you know, how little attention we focus on or we pay attention to fascia. But fascia is extremely important. By the way, the ligaments and tendons are considered fascia. They're made up of the same.
Well, you got to know the reason why we don't, is because there's still a lot of unknowns. There's still a lot we're
that's
not...
What we, that's what I thought, too. But there's actually quite a bit of knowns. Like,
Wait a second. Now, so before you go into this, then I gotta challenge you then, because I didn't get a chance to meet the instructor, but in, you know, what we talk about on Mind Pump a lot, and with our experience with academia and, you know, people like this, is they learned something new. We've evolved in science. We know something, and then they become very dogmatic, and then they start to speak in certainties.
I'm not
about
going there.
Things that we're not certain about.
I've
studied a lot of fascia.
Yeah, no, I'm not even going there. They definitely. I don't care what certification or course you take. You're going to get the impression that it's the be all end all. That's just what happens.
Yeah. Okay. Still feel that, right?
Yeah. If you go to Stick Mobility,
okay. I wanted to hear your opinion
on
that.
If you go to Eldoa, you go to Wim Hof. All these different methods. They're going to come. It's going to come across as like, this is the be all end all. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, I made a few connections in my mind myself through listening to these courses. And I realized like fascia is connected, like from head to toe, your fascia is all connected in much more direct ways than even muscle is. Like muscles overlap and stuff, but they have clear insertions and origins, whereas fascia is all intertwined. So it's like this big long chain that connects from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet, and learning how to activate those lines of fascia and create tension along them with the right central nervous stimulation or the right intention or through tension will create what will cause joints to separate a little bit. Will create space in the spine. Will change or help promote muscle recruitment patterns. So now that I understood the concept, it makes incredible sense. Now, they have their own patented, what they call Eldoas, which are techniques, but I think it's the concept that's really important.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's brilliant in the sense that it's something like they invented. I think it's brilliant in the sense that it's one of those things that we all kind of overlook a little bit.
So this is why
you can control this pretty much with your own like intrinsic way of connecting to that, as opposed to like having, because this is where like you're trying to get a spinal adjustment or you're trying to get realignment, or so you're saying that like you being able to access and control and get this kind of attention response.
Well,
like
not only that, but how you position. You have to
very
position.
Important,
you have to position.
There are spiral lines of tension that go through with the fascia.
Yes.
So think of it this way. Like,
so look, I'm going to stop you right here where you're at, because I'm so glad you did this now, because I've been waiting to talk to you about a lot of this stuff. Because like I said, I've read a lot about fascia and I've always been interested in it. There's stuff that we're just not certain about. So do you know that this little bit of science and information, this is what Hani has taken to do his FST training.
Yeah, but that's stupid.
Exactly. This is why I wanted you guys so bad to watch all of his stuff, because he took something and they're not even doing it correctly to get the real benefits of how you need to position the body in order to really elongate.
No, because what they're doing, what Eldoa is doing, first of all, fascia is very fibrous and tough. Okay. So when if someone says, well, I'm going to loosen your fascia with massage, like you're not. You'd have to fucking hurt someone like severely to do something like that.
It's incredibly strong.
But if you use the muscles and movement that are connected to fascia, right? It's all directly connected, and you use the muscles to activate so that you create lines of tension throughout the fascia. You can create different, you know, decompression areas or areas where there's more compression. And so it's not that different from like when we use prime to prime the body and activate certain muscles.
Exactly.
It's that same concept.
Yeah, very much so.
But now what we're doing is rather than just looking at muscle function, we're looking at lines of tension throughout fascia. Mm. And so it's just another step. It's another layer. It's another tool. And I'll tell you what, it's fascinating. I did some of the LDOAs myself and I was put in these positions. And you can feel with some of these literally from head to toe how you're creating that space. It's really, and it's, I mean, it's, and it literally is from head to toe. Like even your eyeballs, even where you focus your gaze will cause tension within fascia, which then connects all the way down to your feet, you know, through these different chains and lines of tension. So it's really, and you can look up, by the way, there's, you can look up, you know, lines of tension on fascia. They've drawn that up for the last 50 years.
Yeah,
you know, so, Grey's Anatomy will have that.
Yeah, so this is, and here's where I, okay, yesterday after you guys all left, I hung out with some of the Mind Pump guys and fans that were from our forum and listeners that flew over here and drove up from Southern California to come to this. And, you know, we talked, I got a chance to share some stuff about Mind Pump and where we're going and business stuff. And then we got into LDOA, you know, and I got to ask them all, like, you know, what was your experience like? And what did you like? What did you, and, you know, they were all going around. Danny was sharing some of the things that he was challenging the teacher with and stuff as far as like his theories and what he thinks. And so the thing that I was most interested in and what I'm excited to hear from them in the future, I asked them to, you know, please share with me on our forum your experience as you go to teach this to your clients and you start to apply this, because my biggest concern with it is that there's such specific cues that you have to do to get yourself in these lines of tension. And not only that, but each individual will have a more difficult time with each one of those cues. So it's very...
Well, so here's what it is. So, okay, so like we work with muscle. Like I would consider us experts on muscle function in the applicable world, right? That's what we do very well. We understand tension in muscles. We understand activation, recruitment patterns. So when you do an once you understand, and I'm sure, I don't know if you guys remember this, but I remember as a trainer, there was a switch at some point where I went from knowing exercises to really understanding muscle function to where I can look at any exercise or any movement, and I can see how to get you to use the muscles the way I want to, rather than just knowing the exercise, right? Once you understand the lines of tension with the fascia, that's all you need to know. Like then once you know the lines of tension, now you know how to turn the body, articulate,
yes,
move certain things. So I'll give you an example. Like if I have a rope, like you know when you look at a rope is twisted, right? If we look at just a regular piece of twine or like a legit classic type rope, it's twisted. And if we pull on it in that way, we can pull on it that way. But because of the way it's twisted, we're not unraveling the twine or whatever to give us the it's twisted in a particular way. If I untwist it or unwind it and then pull, I'm creating different line of tension. Hmm. And it might create more of a direct line of tension. So that's what you do with the fascia. So for example, if I extend my arm out and my hand is internally rotated, my fascia is twisted one way. If I unwind it and then, you know, extend my wrist and bring my fingers back or whatever, now I'm unwinding that fascia and now I'm creating tension in a more direct way. And so once you learn that with the body and how to position your body, now you can create incredible recruitment patterns and central nervous system connections to the muscles that are attached to the fascia that get it to
okay,
in the positions
now,
you want.
Okay, now take your trainer brain and shut it off and think like a consumer. And this is what I was trying to talk to these kids about was, I can't wait. I want to hear from you guys when you apply this on your people. I want to hear how much of a game changer this is. Right now, I know everyone's excited about it, right? But you got to understand that, you know, internal rotation of the shoulder and anterior pelvic tilt and then internally pronating your foot, yeah, internally rotating the femur. Okay, listen. You digest that, you see it, and it's all of us, light bulb goes off and it's like, holy shit, right? But what we know from training so many people is how challenging that is to teach somebody and then for them to connect. Now, some people will. And I asked these guys, right? So we were sitting around and I asked them about, that their experience. And a couple of them were like, you know, you did a video on YouTube with Stephanie a while back. And Adam, I picked up enough on the cues that I could do it. And I was like, yeah, that's great. That's awesome. So you could do that. Now, pay attention to all the clients that you train, because you guys will train 20 people, you know, in the next couple of days. And those 20 people that you teach this to, how many of them can articulate what you're trying to get them to do and really feel a difference? And then also on top of that, now really put the work in to apply it so they see the benefits.
Oh, I think this is the first exposure for everybody who was in the class. It's the first time them do it. It's a process. There's no way. It would be like taking a bunch of...
Yeah, that's why I'm interested. I'm very curious. I'm very curious to hear...
It'd be like taking a bunch of people who've never, who don't understand, how to correct the basic, patterns that we see, like... forward head and forward shoulder, anterior pelvic tilt, posterior pelvic tilt. It takes a while before you really understand.
Well, and definitely
how to apply
the language is going to completely shift, because you're going to want to make it more relatable and make it more about what you're feeling and just like kind of cue them. I could see them taking that information and then start to sort of formulate their own way of digesting it and then presenting it.
And what I like about it is it's all active. And what I mean by that is we now know that if you can activate your central nervous system and activate tension the way you want it, it's far more effective, especially in the long term, than if you do anything passive. And Aldoa was all active. It was all you creating the intrinsic tension with your body to create these lines of tension, or to take advantage of these lines of tension to do what you want. And that's what I really liked about it. It wasn't like they said, oh, here's your fascia here, so we're going to stretch your fascia. I'm going to manipulate you and put you in this position. It was you doing it yourself, and that's where the benefit comes from.
Oh, for sure. So that being said, too, I'm curious to hear your opinion on what I already know he said without even being there. I know he's shit on foam rolling, right?
Well, I'll tell you why. I didn't hear what he had to say, because
I guarantee he did, though, didn't he?
I think he did. And here's the thing with foam rolling, and we already know this. We've already talked about this with foam rolling.
I talked in way back when, and I don't know if it was me who brought it up or one of you or whatever. It doesn't matter. We talked about it. When more and more stuff was coming out about fascia and really, really truly understanding it, we started to realize that, is the foam roll really doing what we think it's doing? And it's not.
I think the foam roll has benefit. I think the way we explained it was wrong.
Yeah.
So it's not
very well said.
It's not myofascial release. We're not breaking up adhesions. We're not loosening up fascia. So if we go from that standpoint, foam rolling's stupid, because that's not what it's doing. But we do know for a fact foam rolling will change recruitment patterns. It will alleviate pain in the short term. It does activate nociceptors in the target area, which will cause pain relief. And I hate to – people think, it's only localized pain relief because of the pressure. Here's the thing. If I can give you pain relief, you're going to move differently. Now I can get recruitment patterns that I want.
Right.
So sure, the way it was explained before, no. That's not how it works. However, does foam rolling have a place? Absolutely. It's a tool.
This is the analogy I give it now. It's like chiropractic work without you actually going and doing the strength training to fix the imbalances. So if you were to just do foam rolling, it's like what people who go for their pain
when they get adjustments,
adjustments. And so, because I know there's people that right now that are listening, they're like, oh my God, foam rolling changed my life because I took away so much pain that they were having. The problem was they don't realize that they're not fixing their issue, because they're getting relief.
The only way it fixes the issue is if it helps you change the signal that you've either sent or that you're going to send with correctional type exercise. That's it. So we use foam rolling. We prescribe it in MAPS Prime, but the way we do it is we prescribe
it in conjunction with the proper movements to actually fix the issue.
It's targeted, and the way we use it is to
This is part
reduce,
of why Prime is revolutionary. This is why we were so excited about this was, when you talk about the fascia and what we're learning about that and like the foam roll and understanding how you would utilize it as a tool, the importance of priming the body, the importance of fortifying these
and
good patterns.
And post-priming even after.
Yeah, yeah. So all these things. So, man, I mean, I just did a post on the forum. I did your guys' favorite MAPS program. And I think almost anybody who owned Prime said Prime. And then a lot of people, of course, loved Red, because Red was the baby, right? The original. Mm-hmm. So Prime, this is what Prime is all about, man.
It's also just to pinpoint the super loud signal that your body's, sending and where you're receiving that super loud signal. And so now we're trying to reroute that signal or dampen it in some way to where you get temporary relief. And like you said, now you can sort of apply the proper movement process to kind of support that new routed signal.
That being said, I think he actually shit on it completely.
I guarantee they did. Yeah. I wasn't there to hear it.
This is the dogmatic part that I don't like about, like I said, where.
But here's
you
the thing:
learn some shit
when you're really bought into something and you really know it at depth. It's hard to not. You know what I mean? You almost have to dive in and like be like, this is everything, to learn it all. And then towards the end, you see people say, oh, that was a great tool and, you know, what I learned. Mm-hmm. Very rarely do you see an instructor who's like super into what they're doing and passionate about it who doesn't, you know, that's his tool, right? And so that becomes a tool for everything. So if we talk to
so bad, dude. That's so bad. You're a teacher, dude. You're a teacher. Shame on you.
Yeah. Well,
shame on you. I know you're defending right now, but I'm like, no.
No, I'm not defending. I'm explaining.
I'm shame on you. I mean, that's to me like if you're an educator, if you're in that position, you're already in an authoritative position, right? And on top of that, you're intelligent, right? You're teaching others a subject. Like, I feel like you have this. I mean, I feel like that you should have to be versed enough to know more than just your own fucking dogma.
Otherwise,
you say shit like that. I'm like, come on, dude.
I'm pretty sure, you know, most instructors in these realms are probably have a lot of experience in other areas as well. I'm just saying, it's hard. Like, if there was someone teaching, you know, a kin stretch, or you know, someone teaching kettlebells. Like, if I go up to a kettlebell instructor and say, man, how do I work on my delts? Like, they're going to show me kettlebell shit. Like, people just tend to look at their toolbox. They have their limited tools.
Yeah, but this is
it becomes the answer.
This is what's wrong with the industry. This is back to what's wrong with the industry, and why I love what we're doing right now is because it's. I always want to caution people whenever we teach something new or we express something like this, because there's always going to be a wave of people that go try it. Then out of that wave of people that go try it, there's going to be a portion of them that then identify with it and attach themselves to it, and then it becomes their Bible.
Well,
and that's the problem.
As long as they're open to, you know, being integrative with other processes, but there is something to be said about being a specialist in something. And so, you know, him knowing this deep knowledge in this particular subject mm-hmm. is important. And
yeah.
so, you know, it may still come across that it's the end all be all, but as long as there's different scenarios where, okay, there's an integrative process where now you can translate and bring this tool into this situation, or, you know, it pairs well with this or XYZ. You just have to be able to bring up, you know, other methods as well, and
yeah,
be open to it.
I think people like us, we're mavens, right? We get these people, these specialists, and we take, you know, the important stuff, and we know how to apply it, and we understand.
I just find it's one of our responsibilities always to caution. That's to me. I feel like our responsibility as we bring specialists on that we are all excited about, that we always remind people and caution people that. You will probably hear certain things in there that maybe we don't 100% or like agree with or are on board with, but a majority of this information is extremely good and beneficial and is going to add a ton of tools.
If you're a personal trainer and you want to be a really good trainer, you should definitely take courses that specialize in particular things. Eldoa mm-hmm. being with the fascia and how to activate the CNS to, you know, get what you want with the fascia. I think it's brilliant. I think it'll put you, especially right now, it'll put you head and shoulders above your peers.
Yeah.
And I know, look, I know trainers who are very good that I respect very, very well, who've had clients that they've had issues with where they were able to fix most of their problems, but there's that one issue, that one neck pain, that one piece of back pain, that one whatever, that they just can't seem to iron out. And the Eldoa fixed it. And it's not because the Eldoa is the answer to everything. It's because it answered the one thing that they weren't looking at, which mm-hmm. was fascia. You know, so it's that one area that they just didn't know. And now, oh, here we go. We can address this.
Great analogy.
Boom, we
absolutely,
fix it. You know?
Absolutely, for so, sure like that.
Is it bird time?
Bring on the bird!
Queen Quaw!
The eagle has landed.
Chimera Quaw!
Today's Quaw is being brought to you by Chimera Coffee. It's the only coffee that is infused with all natural nootropics for a cleaner, calmer, and more focused buzz without the crash. Click the Chimera link at mindpumpmedia.com and input the discount code MINDPUMP at checkout for 10% off.
It's the motherfucking Quaw.
The eagle has landed.
Quee-quaw.
Our first question is from Brandon Fowler 13. Why is full body done 3 times a week better than a split done 5 times a week?
Definitely somebody who's just tuning in to us.
Let's be very, very, very clear. For the 100%, for the vast majority, probably I would say around 80 to 90% of you will build muscle and get stronger faster, more efficiently and effectively training a full your entire body or doing an entire body type split versus a traditional bro split or bodybuilder split. For example, very basic full body split would be to work the whole body Monday, Wednesday, Friday versus Monday hit back, you know, Tuesday hit chest, Wednesday hit shoulders, you know, arms on Wednesday, you know, that kind of thing. Many studies conclusively have proven this. Strength coaches will agree with us across the board. We've seen it as trainers. It's just way more effective.
I wanted to kind of, you know, pose a question out there as to why you think, like, and this may be, you know, related to this. I'm pretty sure it is. Like, teaching the body how to adapt. Like, it's way more efficient to teach the body how to adapt in a full body routine because then you don't easily, like, go into like over intensified exercises for one portion of your body. So, you know, versus damage where, you know, when you're getting into the split routine, it's like chest day, destroy the fuck out of your chest, right? And you're gonna, like, more cases than not, you're gonna overdo the volume, you're gonna overdo the intensity because that's the focal point for that one day.
It's not just what you don't do, it's a lot of it is what you do. Like, we completely, for some reason,
there's a lot we could sit here for a while. I'm glad you picked this question because there's actually a lot of reasons this is true.
We could for some reasons a long time ago we forgot that frequency, how often you train up an area.
It's the first word in the FIT principle.
Yeah.
Fucking frequency is first.
It's so important, and it's so important for all forms of adaptation. Like, if I want to learn how to fucking dirt bike ride really, really well, am I going to learn better doing 1 day a week of 5 hours of dirt bike riding, or am I going to learn better if I do 1 hour a day for 5 days in a row? Like, it just works. Your brain, there's only so much your brain can learn. There's only so much information your body can produce.
Stop right there, because this is the part where people get disconnected. They don't realize that how important the adaptation process of us building muscle is. So many people identify and have connected to the fucking breaking down, rebuilding bullshit. Like, that's been, I mean, I preached that forever as a trainer. I mean, that's what you used to tell people, right? I mean, I know you guys did too.
That's damage, right?
Let's you tear and break down. That's how you used to explain it. You tear and break down, you eat food, you replenish, you grow, you build muscle. So you say that enough time to people, they read it in enough magazines, they hear it all over fucking social media, they think it's the end all be all of building muscle is to break it down and then rebuild it. And in fact, it's the lesser of the two. Adaptation and actually frequency, that whole concept of actually sending the signal to get the muscle to build and develop, that is superior to the breakdown idea, because both are important. They both are a part of us building muscle. But where I think why it's such an epidemic is that we've been preaching to people for so long that it's about how much you break down and what you eat and when you eat it to recover, to build, that everyone's just totally forgot all about what we're really doing, which is creating a new adaptation. And how does that process work?
You're
pattern recognition.
You're teaching your body to learn something, number one. But here, I'll give you some very easy, like, these are the things that right now, guys and girls that do body part splits, it'll make sense to. Very, very easy. Number one, if you do 15 sets for a body part once a week, 15 sets for back on Monday, I can hit my back on Monday, Wednesday, Friday and do 5 sets each day. I'm doing the same total volume, but I've worked out my back 3 times as frequent. So boom, right there alone, I've added a new variable that I wasn't doing before. That's number one.
Well, explain that, okay, because you do this really well. Explain the importance of that because of how it sends a signal and then how that signal
dampens. We know now for fact that the muscle building signal that you get from lifting weights lasts for about, or peaks around 48 to 72 hours, and then it starts to drop, and it starts to drop very, very quickly. So if I hit my back really hard on Monday, I've got this loud muscle building signal, but by day, you know, 2 or 3, it sharply drops. Even though I'm still recovering, even though my muscle's still sore and I'm recovering, the build muscle signal has dampened dramatically.
And it continues to dampen.
But if I hit it now, you know, I find it peaks at 48, 72 hours, it starts to drop. Boom, I hit it again. And then it starts to drop. Boom, I hit it again. Now the muscle building signal's loud. So that's number one. Same volume, same extra, same, everything's the same. I'm just hitting it three times as often. But now there's some other factors that come into play.
Right.
If I work out my back on Monday, 15 sets, the first, you know, 3 to 5 sets are going to be my big, heavy, compound, effective exercises. After that, I'm kind of fucked. I'm doing cable exercises and squeezing and pumping movements and all these finishing movements because it's I'm tired. I'm exhausted. My muscles aren't really, they're not going to perform like they did in the beginning of the workout. Well, if I split that up over 3 workouts, I tend to hit more effective exercises because you'll see people who hit chest 3 days a week tend to do the big pressing movements more often than someone who hits chest once a week, who's got all these cable, you know, sideways, you know, hammer strength press and all this other weird shit. Mm-hmm. So that's another big
one. Well, here's another one adding to that also. Imagine, okay, and I use like the, when you split it up, I actually don't split it up in different exercises. I just say, imagine 15 sets of deadlifts or on one day or 5 sets of deadlifts Monday, Wednesday, Friday, right?
Yeah, you ain't going to do 15 good sets.
Well, exactly. Imagine on set 10 of deadlifting how fucking gassed you are and how much you're pulling. You're not pulling your heaviest weight at 10, but if you did 5, 5, and 5, all 3 of those workouts, you could be pulling. You'll feel so much stronger. So much. You'll be able to hit. You're going to be able to hit the weights harder. Get more volume out of the workout.
And it opens you up to other variables that you can mess with. For example, if I'm doing 5, you know, 3 days a week of again, we'll focus on back here. Of back, one day may be slow, controlled grinding heavy weight. One day may be a pumping day. Another day may be power. Like, I can do all that effectively on 3 days. I can't do that all effectively all in one day because I've lost the ability to maximize that. Like, if I did 5 sets of heavy grinding, by the time I go to my power movement, fatigued. I've lost it. I've lost all that. So all the way around, there really isn't anything that's, you know what you'll get the benefit from a split? The only benefit you'll get from a split is you'll get better specific muscle endurance. Not general muscle endurance, by the way, because a full body, I'll argue, will give you better general muscle endurance because you're squatting, you're deadlifting, you're bench press all in the same day. But specific, like I can get my biceps to handle 15 sets all in one workout bit better.
I mean, if you're on testosterone, you know, there's ways that like this is appealing because, you know, you can really just get into that damage and it's
fine. I still challenge it because I still would challenge it. And this is why that's exactly
why I think they get away with it.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
That's why they get away with it. I've done both on testosterone and it's far more superior doing a full body. And it's for all those other reasons that's going on.
I am telling you right now, if you're listening, this is all you got to do. And look, worst case scenario. What's the worst thing that could happen? Worst thing that could happen is you switch to this, you figure out it doesn't work for you, and you go back. Big fucking deal. I'm telling you right now, just try this. Take your total volume for the week, okay? All the sets you do for chest, all the sets you do for back, shoulders, arms, legs, core, whatever. Divide it up into 3 full body workouts. Just do that. I promise you, most of you listening right now will blow your fucking mind. After 1 or 2 weeks, you'll never go back.
Everybody does.
You'll notice strength gains immediately. Most people come back and be like, holy shit. By the end of the week, I was lifting 10 more pounds than I was at the beginning of the week. It's a trip.
Yeah, I always just think of it because, you know, just hammering my legs, like how inefficient I was the whole rest of the week. And I would hammer my legs early and you're just like, fuck, you're just walking around. Like, you're so demotivated to then go like lift and just do like a regular workout.
Well, this goes part of back to why it drives me crazy, dude. All the beast mode and all the intensity driven shit, like, I hate that stuff so bad because this is why people struggle with this concept because they don't feel the same way like they feel from hammering the fuck out of themselves for so many years. Yeah. So the only people I ever hear that we tell to go full body is they don't get that same fucking I crushed myself after a workout feeling. It's different. You know, it's a different feel than that. You're actually lifting smart now. Yeah. So they connect with that fucking beast mode so much that's what they stop doing it because they're like, oh, I don't feel crushed like I felt when I hammer a one muscle for fucking 1 hour.
And I will say this.
Stupid.
We don't recommend going to failure a lot anyway, but if you're doing a full body, you definitely shouldn't go to failure because you're going to failure on your lifts, heavy hard lifts 3 days a week for the same body part. You can start to get issues with connective tissue and your joints and stuff. Mm-hmm. Stop 2 or 3 reps short of it. That's the only one piece of advice I'll give you. If you do this, is just stop about 2 reps short of failure. But go ahead, take your fucking exercises, split them up over 3 days. I promise you, most of you listening right now will blow you away.
Mark Wohls, best way to ID an intolerance.
Oh, he's probably talking about a food intolerance, Doug?
Mm. Yes.
So a food intolerance. So here's the thing. It's still hotly debated. That's not what I debated.
It's a Schaefer word.
I know. I did it. Yeah. It's hotly debated in the medical community as to whether or not intolerances actually exist. We know what food allergies are, and they're easy to identify. You eat a food, you get an immediate reaction, hives, or you can't breathe, or you throw up, or worse, you know, anaphylactic shock. I mean, that's a very easy thing to identify. And there's particular antibodies that we identify that are connected to that. Now, there's other antibodies that we can identify that will point to an intolerance. An intolerance is not an immediate strong reaction. In fact, intolerances tend to take a little while to build up. And this, so the symptoms are harder to identify. For example, you know, I'm working with a client right now who's dealing with acne, okay, skin issues. And that can be a sign of a food intolerance. However, acne is not going to show up on your face immediately after eating the particular food that you're in intolerance to. It can take time. And if I stop eating that food, my acne is not going to clear up right away. Yeah. So it could take some time to identify that.
It would be more of an allergy if it was immediate, right? Versus correct. An intolerance is, yeah, like a chronic. So you got to think more in terms of like what you've been eating consistently over and over and over
The only way to really do this, or how I do this with clients, is you have to be consistent about what you're eating, period. Like mm-hmm. you need to have like some sort of structure. So if you really care about digging into this and trying to get to the bottom of what could be causing inflammation or water retention in you, or you're in whatever, there could be lots of signs. You could be headaches, could be sleep related, could be skin related, could be whatever, right? So whatever your thing is that you have that you think that could be caused by an intolerance, you first got to take a snapshot of like, okay, here's all the foods that we're eating. Then I'm going to tell a client like, okay, we're going to eliminate one thing. We're going to get rid of that out of your diet, whether it be dairy or whether it be processed foods or whether it be artificial sweeteners or something that, you know, has been linked to or can cause, okay, even though we know
it tends to be common with
because where we're at with all this. And then what I'll do is we'll just eliminate it and then we'll assess.
And then you wait.
Yeah, we wait. We wait after a couple of weeks of doing that, and I hear their feedback and they're like, okay, Adam, I feel just as shitty. I don't know. Okay, well, that's not it. Go ahead and put that back in. Mm-hmm. Now we'll take something else out, you know, and you just,
or it's when you reintroduce it that you really see.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or you're
the,
right. Yes.
The hardcore way to do it, the real hardcore way to do it, is to eliminate all the common intolerances all at the same time.
And then
go off of them for like a month or two, and yeah. then introduce one for 3 to 4 days, 5 days, 7 days, or whatever, and then see what happens. And then
is that part of the elimination diet protocol?
That's how elimination diet protocol works. There's a test you can buy and take. It's called a Pinner test, and it's a blood test. And it looks at, I believe, IgG antibodies. I think those are the ones associated.
Can you get that through Amazon?
I'm not sure. And they're kind of expensive. Now, the problem with the Pinner test is they're not totally accurate. However, it's way better than a guess. You know what I'm saying? And I did a Pinner test, and it actually helped me quite a bit when I was identifying mine. Uh-huh. Food intolerances can change, too.
Does the 24andMe go over that at all?
No. No.
That you can get on Amazon.
That's different, though. Yeah. You and they can change. Like if I eat lots and lots and lots of food and I develop an intolerance to it because I'm eating the same food over and over again, and I eliminate it, and it's been a year since I've really had it in my diet, and then I reintroduce it, I might not have an intolerance to it anymore. Mm. So here's some of the signs and symptoms you want to look for when it comes to intolerance. Anything autoimmune. So anything that's an autoimmune issue can be linked to some kind of a food intolerance, or the food intolerance can make it really, really bad. So, or worse. So skin issues like psoriasis or eczema, asthma, bowel issues, indigestion, gastric reflux, constipation, diarrhea. These are all common things that can come from food intolerances, and you know, once you eliminate these foods, see how those particular things react. But you got to give it some time. You know, that's just one of the other things. I do want to remind people, by the way, I do want to remind people that we have the 30 days of coaching.
This is something. Okay, so especially when
I want to say that
especially when we're talking about stuff like this, because we do cover some of this when we get into nutrition. And, you know, when you go through the 30 days of coaching, this is absolutely free. So you, as soon as you go to mindpumpmedia.com, there'll be a pop-up and it says free coaching with Mind Pump. You register for that. And then every day you're going to get dripped an email. And we hone in on one topic at a time. So like protein and then carbs and then gut flora. And like each day there's a topic with bullet points. And then on top of the bullet points, you're also going to get videos where, or I mean, some of the podcast episodes were right where we talk in depth about this subject. So, I mean, definitely go on there, sign up. If you're not signed up already, take advantage of that. It's 30 days free coaching with us and exactly how we talk to our clients.
Totally helps. Last question.
Adam Castro.
What happened to Doug?
Well, what happened to Doug's voice over there?
Perfect study. If a perfect study came out that shows artificial sweeteners are perfectly safe and have no detriments, would you change the way you eat?
Oh, okay. Thanks, Justin. Would we change the way we eat if artificial sweeteners came out and it showed like irrefutable evidence, perfectly safe, no detriment whatsoever? I wouldn't, and I'll tell you why.
Yeah, I already know why. I think we all would be the same
food, way. All the foods that are artificially sweetened, what benefit? There's really nothing else they can give me. That, I mean, maybe if I want a sweet or something and I don't want sugar and I know it's perfectly safe, I'll have it. But just there's really no other benefit to those foods typically. They're usually heavily processed or there's no like real nutrient benefit. It's usually a quote unquote, you know, shitty type of food. So I'll pretty much eat the same way I do now. Do I think this is going to ever happen? No, I think it's
going the other way.
Yeah. I think it's super irresponsible to assume that you can consume anything and it has zero effect on you. Yeah. You know what I mean? It doesn't do anything to your body. I think that's irresponsible. I think we're finding now with studies, like we used to think that, sucralose completely, for example, went through your body. Well, now we know that's not true.
Well,
actually some of it gets stored.
I would say, I mean, he even describes like it's safe or it has no detriments on the way that you eat, but is it benefiting you? Is it giving you nutrients? You know, like, is it giving you things that, you know, like your cells are craving for? Is this part of like, you know, a chemistry that you need to thrive with? And I just don't see any of that, even with sugar. It's like, it's not one of those things I'm looking at like, you know, oh, sweet. That's nutrient dense. You know, that's something I'm seeking out. You know, that's more I'm sparingly, you know, even thinking about it.
So I, even if it's like he said, right, the study comes out, it's totally not. And the reason why I wouldn't is, so since I've been like intuitive eating, I haven't been tracking for quite some time now. The process that I had, or how I do this is I've made like a list of all these foods that are beneficial to my body. Especially the ones I know I don't get on like a regular basis, like let's say like bell peppers, you know, I'm trying to target my digestive enzymes, right? So that's something that, so instead of like eliminating or not allowing certain foods, I'm actually targeting foods. So every day I'm trying to go after things in my diet.
Yeah.
Now that being said, I still have things that have artificial sweeteners in there. I do. I just don't fool myself to think that it's okay, or and whether it is or not, it's not giving me anything good. It's not an ideal thing I should be consuming.
It's not on your list of foods that you're going after.
Yeah, I'm most certainly not going after it, and I'm most certainly not making it a habit that it's always in my diet, because it isn't beneficial. So I don't sweat about it if I decide to have a Diet Coke one time, or hey, I've been out at somewhere for a longest time and someone has a Quest bar and I open it up and eat it. Like, I'm not fucking freaking out, or I'm not like that little bitch who's like, oh no, I can't have that. I won't eat that. No, it's not like that. But what I am not doing either is I'm not fooling myself to think that it's fucking beneficial at all.
Well, and here's the way I look at it. Like, I don't eat lots of sweets anyway, but if I want one, I'll get one, right?
Yeah.
Do sweets sweetened with sugar taste better than sweets sweetened with artificial sweeteners?
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, there's no fucking competition. Like, artificial sweeteners definitely are better than nothing, but they don't compare to real to sugar. Sugar just tastes better. So if I'm going to have a sweet, and since I don't have it all the time, then I'm just going to have it with fucking
dude,
sugar.
Dude, on that
so
note,
the argument then is the low calorie thing.
There, I was
right?
just going to say, that's such a, you know what, that's such a good point, Sal.
Well, that's because they want it every day.
Yeah, exactly.
I know.
That is such a good point, because you know what? You should have it with real sugar. And the reason why you should is because you should eat it as much as you can
fit.
Keeps
it sparing.
Keep it in your diet without it fucking adding a bunch of weight to your body. If you if you have real sugar, you can have real sugar just fine throughout your day or throughout your week or whatever, and it not make you fat. Right. If it's making you fat, you're probably abusing it.
Yeah, if it makes you sick and you know if you're eating a shit ton of it, that's a problem. But
it's
like
a very simple rule.
I don't have sweets every day. I just don't. I have them every once in a while. So when I do, I'm not going to be like, ooh, I want something sweet. I'm going to go for that Splenda flavored fucking, you know, cupcake. I'm like, I'm going to get the real cupcake.
Dude, I swear this all comes back from that whole dessert thing. Like that concept of dessert, like having to have, dessert after a meal. It's like, why am I rewarding myself for eating fucking food?
Yeah,
I don't get it.
Congratulations, you ate food.
Hey, you did. Oh, I get that cupcake. Yeah.
Here's some more food.
Do you know the truth? But I think the reason why we're so passionate about it, because, you know, when you've trained so many clients and you've had this discussion sitting with someone privately and you're trying to help them through all this, the reason why we speak so passionately, and I think people think that we demonize artificial sweeteners or we're, it's like, no, what I know is that 90%+ of the people I've ever sat down and talked to about helping them out with their eating, the reason why they do all these things because they want them in their diet all the time.
Say, if you have to fight to keep it in there, that's a problem.
Yes.
Like, get out of here, dude. Just admit that you don't want it in your diet and you know it'll show up, but like it's not ideal.
Yeah, and let it be a natural thing that checks you. Don't demonize it. Don't fucking be all weird about it if it happens to come in.
Because what happens is you look at something that's a sweet and you think, instead of it being a treat like it should be, you think, oh, it's got no sugar because it's artificially sweetened. I can have this every day. Yeah. And then that's what they do. They have it every single day.
Yeah.
And, you know, the supplement, of course, the supplement industry
Take advantage of this.
They need this.
Well, they take advantage
of it. And listen, I hate to say this, okay, but this is true. There's a massive conflict of interest when you are a fitness professional or a fitness celebrity or whatever, and you're touting how perfectly safe artificial sweeteners are and how great they are, and you sell products sweetened with those things. It's just a huge conflict of interest, and of course they're going to say that. Why wouldn't they?
They'd be stupid, because if they did, they have to, because if they didn't, then everybody's going to question, why do you have something?
Well, look, all you got to do is look, mark my words, we got about 5 years, and you'll start to see this. You've already seen it. We already had lots of people report to us from the Arnold Classic convention saying, I couldn't believe how many booths for, you know, more natural products or products, sweetened naturally versus artificially were coming out. I think you're going to see more and more companies do this because consumers are asking for it. They're saying, no, I don't want that kind of stuff. And we got some studies coming out like, you know, the stuff on sucralose and the gut flora and aspartame, how it affects the brain and certain things. Like, as more and more stuff comes out, more of it becomes available because of the internet, you're going to see less and less people want those in their products. They're going to want more things that are sweetened naturally.
Well, I think people just don't realize that there is such a thing as healthier foods. And I hate that. I hate that there's people out there that are saying that there's no such thing as good food, bad food. Yes, there is such thing as healthier food than other foods. It's a fucking fact. And that's what we know. And there's still a lot that we don't know. There's still so much we're learning because we have not been able to completely, you know, take all the benefits that's inside of a bell pepper or avocado or whatever and then put it into a wrapper. We haven't. Sure, we can take the macronutrients and say, oh, the protein.
We know what we know.
The proteins match.
What are you talking about, man? It's called Soylent.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
It's not
everything you need in a powder.
It's not the same. There's a reason why that is, and it's will forever be that way. And, I shouldn't say that because, you know what?
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, who knows? Maybe one day we figure out how to do that, but we're not there yet.
Yeah. Listen, if you like Mind Pump, leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. If we like your review and we pick it, you'll get a free Mind Pump t-shirt. Also, go to YouTube. Mind Pump TV, a new video every single day. Also on Instagram, you can find us at Mind Pump Radio. You can find me at Mind Pump Sal, Adam at Mind Pump Adam, and Justin at Mind Pump Justin.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic, 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.